Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It used to be hard to find the exact auto part you needed. And that meant spending a lot of time at swap meets. It's a different game now when you can order exactly what you need from eBay Motors. They have 122 million parts, so you can always find the right fitment. Spend less time searching and more time building with the eBay Motors app or visit ebaymotors.com. Let's ride.
So, in an unexpected, I think from my point of view anyway, as soon as it went to 2-2, thought we lost. In an unexpected turn of events, Everton have beaten Hull City 3-2 in the third round of the FA Cup. I am joined for this post-match reaction by Matt Flusk and Rob Vera. I'll come to you first. Oh, hold on. Sorry, I've got the video on my screen there and it just kicked in the audio. Anyway, Matt, I'll come to you first. So, what were your first thoughts upon this game? I mean, did you think this would be a classic case of Everton getting ditched out in the third round?
No, well, I said on the spaces before the game, I thought it was like 75% we'd probably beat them just because they're not very good. I know we aren't, but God, it was hard work, wasn't it?
We did make hard work of it.
As you said,
they're not very good. And I think after the first, they went ahead in 30 seconds. I missed the goal. I'd gone the shop. I got back and it was 1-0. I went to the shop and the teams were coming out, got back 1-0 already. But yeah, it was like they sort of took that early initiative and you thought, oh Christ, here we go. But I think we did make them.
I mean, they say there's no bad way to win a cup tie, but I think that was the bad way, wasn't it?
It wasn't ideal. But you know, we're in the half of the next round. That's the main thing. But I don't know, I think it has still thrown up a lot of questions. It's probably thrown up more questions than it's answered, that one. Rob, what did you make of the whole... We'll go into the whole thing, first of all, and then we'll pick up on the nuances of the game as we go on. But what did you make of the cup tie overall?
Oh, man. I suppose in some... I mean, I called... I think I picked a 3-1 Everton win to start, so I'm only off by a goal. And yet, somehow in a game where 5 combined goals were scored and we went to extra time, that felt so tedious. It just felt so tedious. I don't know. I wondered how quickly, you know, how many minutes into this post-match we would have the term in the hat come out. And it did not disappoint. That came
pretty quickly. If anything, out of a disappointment, but not on this case.
Well, so I guess, okay, look, let's bottom line it. It's a win. We don't win very much, so we'll take wins. From that standpoint, that's good. I think that we could have just as easily won without the manager making it so difficult for us to win with some of the substitutions. Ped, you know, Ped from Toffee TV probably had the tweet that I felt the most during that match, which was that Solomon Rondon is the hill that Benitez is prepared to die on. It's going to die on. I don't understand. And Jean-Philippe Gabaman, God love JPEG, who I certainly had high hopes for when he first arrived at Everton. What an odd, completely unnecessary and, you know, just completely for no good reason substitution at the end of normal time. But again, there's just so much of that. I didn't understand the starting 11. I didn't understand, you know, why it seems like the manager insists on trying to out clever everybody. I think it's almost like we're supposed to react with, that doesn't make much sense to have three right backs in the squad or five at the back against, you know, one of the worst teams in the championship. Like, I don't know. It just seems like we're supposed to react that way so that he can be like, oh, but believe me, I'm playing 4D chess in a way that you all just can't understand. That your thick football brains just don't have the ability to comprehend. And maybe that's true. As I proudly say, I am the football dummy of the Blue Room, but I don't really get why it had to be the way that it was. The VAR stuff, I'm going to touch on that, and then I don't necessarily need to talk about it again, even though you guys might want to. So if you do, fine. I still don't understand how this football pyramid, that we talk about so lovingly and something that we have to save, is just literally awash with cash at the top level. And yet, for one of the oldest trophy competitions on planet Earth, we just sort of accept that, oh, well, you know, there's no way in that part of England for VAR technology to work. The satellites aren't aligned correctly. There's no way that cameras can work. I don't even know if anyone could get phone service in Hull tonight. I mean, apparently it's stuck in the 60s or 70s or something. But there were two not even remotely controversial, but two just clear penalties that were missed. And you take the lack of VAR technology and it meets the unstoppable force of a lack of VAR meeting the immovable object that is Kevin Friend's incompetency. And once again, you sort of had the thing that just the combo platter of this thing we watch every week, which is it's one thing to watch a bad team. It's another to watch a bad team in a poorly officiated, under funded, apparently, competition that goes to extra time of all things. But hey, we're in the hat, guys, and so I guess we can take it from there and look on to better days. We'll get on to talking about more positive things, but I will say that, you know, for as much as I was thinking I'm going to be talking a lot about Anthony Gordon, I'm going to be talking about the John Joe Kenny-sance, and I'm going to be talking about I'm going to be talking about Damari Gray, I'm bemused by the fact that Andrus Townsend came on at all for Gordon, even though I guess he's the manager gets the last laugh because Townsend scored a goal that required some of the worst goalkeeping I've ever seen to look like a worldie. So that's kind of where I'm at in terms of the game.
I will pick up on the VAR thing first, because it is a huge issue. You know, that game could feasibly have been completely out of sight had the referee won, had the balls to actually give the decision that he seen was right on the pitch. Because in real time, those decisions were just, they were both clear penalties. But the ref bottled out of them both. And you kind of think, is this the privilege that Premier League referees have got now? Because they have got the luxury of VAR. They can see a decision that they maybe think, oh, I'm not sure about that. They can see that decision and think, going to bail me out. And tonight it wasn't, because we've got this ludicrous decision again, as we saw at Millwall a couple of years back, when, you know, they should have had their goal. We were shite at Millwall, we deserved to go out, but they did score a goal that was handball, and VAR would have seen it and given it as handball. But because of the way this whole weird structure goes, some games have VAR, some games shouldn't. I think it really should be the case that if you're in a competition, all games have VAR or all games don't. So Premier League, they've all got VAR or they've not. FA Cup, doesn't matter where you're playing. And to be fair, Hull is a big city. It's a good city. And it's, Christ, the Hull's ground used to be called the Kingston Communications Stadium, the KC Stadium, because it was literally owned by a fucking communications company. You can get VAR. Christ knows what hope anyone got. But it's just, it's an absolute farce that, we've got this situation whereby some games can be, you know, on the coin toss, some games can go the other way because it's not there. Tonight, Everton should have had two clear-cut penalties. We probably didn't deserve it. If we'd won that game 4-1, it would have been completely undeserved. We probably didn't deserve to win it 3-2. But the fact is, we should have had two penalties. We didn't get them. Kevin Friend, for my mind, shit out of those decisions that he could easily have made because we saw it in real time. He saw it in real time. The second one, he was right in front of it. The player's arms behind his back. He's like this. And he doesn't give it. And, you know, the commentary team is saying it could have been an actual position. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But, Matt, what do you think of it? I think it's a complete farce. You know, we've got through. It's brilliant. That's great. That's the main thing. But, you know, games can hang on those decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. The gun shy is the top and bottom of it. Like you say, they've had VAR to bail them out or... It's just, it might even just be a case of they're out of practice of making those split second decisions and, you know, putting the bottle on the line. But, I mean, the issue about not having VAR in the competition is obviously a big problem. But how many games are there in the third round? 32 games or something like that? Or maybe even more?
More than that, I think. That's more than that, yeah.
64 games?
8-4-2. So it's 50 odd. Is it? Maybe more, 60 well,
64 then.
There's a lot of games in there anyway.
There'll be a part of two. But what I'm saying is it might be rather than a technology issue, a personnel issue. Because when you've got that many games on in one weekend, don't forget VARs. You do need two referees in that room.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I can... It could kind be a case where they just say then we've not got the capacity for it. Just don't use it anywhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because we have seen it in other years and other competitions where certain teams have got decisions further down the line in, you know, later games or something, or even there's been decisions on the same day in the same hour where one had VAR and one didn't. And
I'm sorry, but and Matt, you are being very gracious to try to provide an excuse here, but I'm sorry. The notion, well, I mean, am I oversimplifying this? You know, hire more people. You know, there's an unmet need here. There's billions and billions of pounds of revenue that flood into this sport every year from around the world. So don't tell me that we can't afford to staff the VAR room in London or whatever.
This is how the UK works.
The boys.
There's money. There's money. There's money everywhere in the UK, but we've just not got enough of the sort of vital services that we need. You know, a VAR has become a vital service in football, and we just fund it.
Yeah, but look, it's silly that we should. And by the way, even if we had had no decisions go against us tonight, everything we're saying is still true. There's no point in having a competition. And I say this somewhat tongue in cheek, talking about a sport who is literally built on massive inequality and gaps in financial power and those sorts of things. But having a competition where clubs are in it ostensibly, you know, with the same kind of criteria to win in advance and get to a final, and then them not playing under the same set of rules. You know, it almost feels like, well, look, for these away games at the championship, like, we're going to have one linesman instead of two. We just can't afford, like, it's almost like we would find that to be absurd. And yet a lot of people are just kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess we don't have VAR tonight, as if that's acceptable. That's not acceptable. It's ridiculous.
The best example of that was Millwall the other year when their players handballed it and then scored. It literally got shown on the big screen, the ground. And their manager is saying to whoever he can, get that
look
in case the referee sees it. They literally had VAR there, but without having VAR there, it was weird as fuck. And it just shows what an absolute shambles the whole thing is. I mean, the good news is for us tonight anyway, that we got through anyway. We managed somehow to eke a result out of that, which I genuinely, I don't know, it's a tough one. Did we deserve to win that? We didn't play particularly well in any, you know.
We won.
Had the first, what, 5 minutes? We probably had the next 20. But I don't think we played well at any point.
If that had been a league game, Les, and there was no extra time and you know, penalties potentially looming, I don't know that we could have made a really great argument for why we should have won. I mean, I think a draw would have been a somewhat fair result, given that Hull definitely played better than we did for, you know, a few decent stretches, including the first 20 minutes of the game. And this slow start malaise that we seem to just constantly have under, I don't know, is it this manager or I don't know, the last few managers, it makes everything so much harder than it has to be.
Yeah, I think we've had a slow start thing under quite a few managers in the past.
Yeah.
Benitez, we seem to have a goal behind thing.
Yeah.
Is it 13 games now we've gone behind? I think it was something ridiculous where we've gone behind in so many games. When we played Southampton, we went behind. It was like, oh, God, this was shit. And then we won. I was like, oh, my God, this team has finally shown some character from behind. But now we've got in this horrible position where we're just going behind in games all the time. And sometimes we'll claw it back, which is great. But other times we won't. Thankfully, today, we did.
We got the most points from losing positions this season in the league.
Oh, have we, yeah.
Because we go behind so often.
All the time.
So, yeah.
Every game.
Well, and by the way, I think about how funny that is given how few wins we've got. But I think what's interesting, and I think tonight sort of followed that pattern, is whenever the question about the manager comes up, I always, you know, I kind of sort through the myriad of different arguments. And by the way, I cannot tell you how exasperating it is to watch a broadcast of an Everton game, them refer to our current struggles and then make reference to the idea that because Rafa Benitez used to manage Liverpool, that we're pretty unhappy with him. Like, we're so far beyond that. I don't even think about that very much. But what I always come back to is the question of, is the manager taking what he has got at his disposal and making us better than the sum of our parts, or worse than the sum of our parts? Or I guess the third option would be he's getting about as much as he can get out of this group. I don't know. And I acknowledge all the caveats, but as I said on the spaces to you, Les, at a certain point, you lose so many games and you drop so many points that all the caveats about injuries and hard luck and whatever you want to throw, you know, lack of transfer funds. I mean, I've heard it all. I get it. I know that those are all factors. But at a certain point, the number of losses, the bad performances piling up are so great that you have to look at the question of is he taking this group and making us any better, or is he actually making us worse? And it's hard when you look at the decision making on substitutions, the starts, the three right backs in the squad, starting two of them in the starting 11. Like, there's a million of these types of things that, and I guess Coleman might have been part of three at the back tonight, maybe. Boy, that says something for Mason Holgate if that's really the case. But I mean, it just continues to be the same thing we are always talking about. And look, there's a win tonight, but it was one of those wins, much like the Damari Gray winner against Arsenal, or when Townsend has had to score a worldie to pull us out of the fire. It feels like we get points or we get a win every once in a blue moon, despite the manager. And it's taking some sort of, like, in this case tonight, it's taking, and as much as Townsend has scored some really nice looking goals for us.
Shot.
Yeah, that was a shocking display of goalkeeping to let that in. So you know, he got that. And then of course, Gray against Arsenal. And, you know, you have a few of these and it's, you just keep coming back to this notion that the irony of the kind of narrative of Rafa Benitez being unlucky is that he's actually lucky to have gotten even the results that he has gotten, given how much he has served to sabotage proceedings himself.
Yeah, we've had comments. Mr. Titler said we're getting worse every game. This is absolutely abysmal. And someone said we're kind of getting results like that in spite of Benitez. Sorry, can't see who it was. O'Brien, I think we won in spite of Benitez, definitely not because of him. And that's kind of how it feels. It's like we should be just made up. We're in the next round of the cup, because there's nothing more depressing in football than when you get to the next round of the FA Cup and you're not in the draw and you're seeing teams getting drawn out and you've been knocked out. It does feel like we're just prolonging the agony at this point. It's like, I mean, people have said it here, we're going to get Chelsea or Man City next round. That is almost nailed on, by the way. It will probably happen.
But you hope, Les, that, and again, I'm trying to be positive here. You hope that by then, by the next round, that you're getting some players back. Maybe Calvert-Lewin is kind of back to being some semblance of himself, and Richarlison's back, and you know, I don't know. But I will say that as long as the back line continues to look like this and it be this big mess, that I don't even know that, you know, as much as you say, well, we'll definitely draw City next round, I'm not sure if we struggled this much tonight against Hull, who is the opponent that is one that we would breathe a sigh of relief with? I just don't know who that would be. As long as the manager continues to insist on dying on the hill of not playing three central midfielders or playing Rondon when he's got, when he's got other options, that like Cenk Tosun in 5 minutes looked better than Rondon did tonight. He looked more dangerous. And that is a low bar, y'all. That is a really low bar. And that's what's so frustrating.
Yeah, so Tooth the Orifice here said, honestly, a good position for Sheamus is right centre back. Not sure about that, to be honest.
I think he's very solid.
Like, he did okay, but he's never a centre back. I think right back's looking a bit of a dodgy position.
I'd never have him as centre back in the two. That would just be asking for trouble. But in the three, yeah, he's got enough cover. Generous word, cover around him.
How tall is Sheamus?
5'9", 5'10". Yeah, he's taller than you think.
He's definitely under the 6 foot club. A little bit.
5'9" is about what I thought.
A little bit taller than me. Not as tall as you, Robin. Definitely not as tall as you, Matt. Definitely not. But yeah, what do you think about that then? The fact that we maybe won this game in spite of what he says. I'm not sure, because I think those players go out and do exactly what they tell them to, which is kind of shown in those goals we're conceding. We didn't tonight, but we could have done, whereby the opposition has a corner, gets whipped in, centre-backs are marked, the three centre-backs are marking one player, there's two free at the back post. It happened again tonight, but Hull didn't score from it. It was early on in the game, but it's a recurring thing now, and I don't know if we are winning in spite of his tactics. For me, Benitez definitely seems to be forcing these tactics on players that are not comfortable with it, do not want to play to these tactics. But there's no one on that side to get a grip of anyone to say, look, right, the game's on, let's just do this at a corner, for instance, to say, do you know what? Let's not leave those two players at the back. You go and mark him. I'll stay here, do our own thing. Matt, what do you think? Do you think this is a good thing that Benitez, this is quite a loaded question, but do you think this is a good thing that Benitez is forcing this on the players in the hope that they will eventually adopt what he thinks is a winning formula? It might not be. I know he had the same problems at Liverpool with the zonal marking. Don't want to talk about zonal marking at all, but he had the same issues. He had the luxury of time at Liverpool. He's not got that here. Do you think these players have got the character to win in spite of him? Or are we just kind of getting the odd results in 10 doing what he's saying?
I'll be very rude and I'll answer your question with another question. Do you feel like we've got momentum after this result now?
No, that is a very good question.
Did you feel like we had momentum after the Arsenal game?
No.
Maybe because of the manner of it in a bit, but Like in both of those games, which are, you know, well, I am right in saying they're our last two wins, aren't they, in any competition?
Yeah.
We've basically limped over the line or snatched it at the end. So if we're not carrying momentum into games, you know, barring any kind of postponement again because of suspected, supposed COVID cases after their little jaunt to the darts, we're supposed to be playing Leicester in 3 days, little over 3 days in the Tuesday.
Yeah.
Got Damari Gray, who was absolutely dead on his feet at the end there. Like, it wasn't even a case of he was chasing balls and couldn't catch them. He wasn't even chasing them towards the end. He was just completely gone, completely finished.
Was Gordon injured? Was there something wrong with Gordon? That
I didn't think so. No.
I think that was a tough decision.
Mm.
Yep. Take off your brightest player.
That's the maddening part, right? Because again, let's say I want to try to do the thing where I, you know, give a little benefit of the doubt here, or try to look at the positives. So take the first half, for instance. We were abject for the first 20 minutes. To concede within 45 seconds or whatever was really embarrassing. And of course it set a certain tone, but to the credit of the group out there, they did seem to really pull it together, started playing, you know, creating chances, in particular, Gordon and again, Jonjo Kenny gets a really nice assist for Andre Gomes, who hadn't scored in 10 years from what I can recall. Was the last time Gomes scored against Wolves? If that goal against, I think it was a loss at home against
Wolves. When he lashed it in at the street end.
Yeah. But my point is that, okay, they found something that worked, and we get into the second half and it seemed like the idea was, okay, we've got this under control, because God knows Everton at 2-1 or money in the bank, right? So and I'm thinking, okay, maybe generously I can say, you know, there are concerns with depth and blah, 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 and maybe someone's played a little too much and give him rest. Why the oldest dudes on the pitch all stay on there, and yet the youngest, like Anthony Gordon, who is playing really well, had a great assist. What a class assist that was on Damari Gray's goal, by the way. That kind of interplay in the box. I don't know. We don't have attacking players who pass well in the box, and to have Gordon, you know, start to show these flashes, it's really exciting. And you know, he and Gray, I think, are starting to build something. And it always feels like right when they've stumbled on something, or the manager has stumbled on something, a combination that might work, or a little bit of good spell of play, he decides to outsmart himself. He's like, well, okay, this is clearly we got to get Gordon off the pitch here. And I'm saying maybe he was hurt, but I don't think he was. And Townsend, no. Townsend came on and he scored the game winner. So I know that this kind of argument will seem silly, but a guy who is coming back early by all accounts, because he really forced his way into coming back early from a broken foot, you know, getting heavy minutes away at Hull. It just felt, you know, for a Gordon who didn't seem to need to come out, whereas Damari Gray looked like he could have come out, 30 minutes before he did. But at that point, if you've already taken Gordon out, you're in a position where you can't take them both off. It just, these decisions feel so hackneyed. They feel so overthought, and I don't know if that's just what Everton does to you, or if this is just a manager who just it's sort of like a player who used to have a lot of great pace. They just, and I'm not, I don't know if Benitez ever did, but he did at one point in his life, but he just, coaches sometimes lose it too. And for whatever reason, he always feels with his moves and his other decisions, he always feels a step behind. I think Matt Jones and others have said reactive. He's very reactive as a manager. And that to me is a sure sign of someone who just is, who just doesn't have that level anymore. And yet we are holding on for dear life for reasons that escape me.
Yeah, you're asking that about the substitution, and is that an Everton thing? Is it Benitez thing? It brings to mind that it's almost like an iconic picture now of his, I think it was very late on in his Liverpool career, right before he got sacked. And were they playing Birmingham or someone? And they were either drawing or losing. And he brings off Fernando Torres. and the camera pans, like zooms in on Torres, and Gerrard's in the foreground, and you see Torres jogging off like that with his face, and he just goes, I don't know. And Gerrard just turns around and he's like, what's he doing? And like that was like the moment that Liverpool fans went, that's the end for him. That kind of, like you say, 4D chess move. It's like he's on, oh, the opposition won't expect this. It's like, but of course they won't expect it.
As he points both barrels of the shotgun at his feet, the opposition will not expect this.
Yeah,
it is. But that just on the Anthony Gordon substitution, I know Andros Townsend scored the winner, but he came on after 66 minutes for Gordon.
Yeah. Well, so Les, here's a question for you from the Hull perspective. Do you think Hull was relieved when Anthony Gordon went off at 66 minutes?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would have been. Yeah. He was the only one he and Gray were the only two that were really kind of giving him any trouble up front.
That substitution made no sense at all from an Everton perspective.
Yeah.
But even if you think you're going to win the game in 90 minutes, which is a fucking stretch, because any of us thought at 2-1 we would win that game in 90 minutes, to bring a player off with what? 24 minutes left.
And
your best player off with 24 minutes left. It's a massive stretch. That's not even a gamble. That's just a bit reckless.
Yeah. It's not even conservative. Because if you say that that move is conservative, you're almost arguing that there is a thought behind it. And I just don't know what the thought is. Let me put it this way. Every minute that every minute that Gordon didn't play.
Call him Tony like Matt does. Tony Gordon.
Let me put it another way. If you want to try to kind of add some kind of almost like mathematical construct to this, every minute that Gordon didn't play in the 90 was a let off for Hull, and every minute that Rondon persisted, despite all available visual evidence, was a minute that hurt Everton and also helped Hull. Again, you got to ask yourself with substitutions, especially when you had so much. Like, I get that you don't have Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison, but even if you don't want to put Ching Tosin on, even if you don't want to put Lewis Dobbin on for until the very, very end for reasons that I don't understand, you still have the ability to say, all right, I'm going to take Rondon off. I'll put Gray here. I'll bring on, like, I don't understand what the idea is. Even if it's a bad idea, I could say, well, I don't agree with this. I get where he's coming from, but I don't think it was a good decision. I just don't get where he's coming from on some of these decisions. And it was especially amidst the backdrop of a situation with Lewis Dobbin, where, and again, I know some people will be like, who cares, he's a kid or whatever, but see, Everton can't keep losing these talents that they have spent time and resources developing. And the signal, what you say to someone like Lewis Dobbin is, you have a future here, you're going to begin to get meaningful time, blah blah blah, and you back that up by not playing him and playing a guy in Rondon who will not be here next season. He won't be here next season. What is the point? He was scoring or even was decent at hold up play. Like, it's not even about goals, even though that ought to be the main thing for a striker. It's that he doesn't even do any of the other things very well because he's finished. He is physically finished. And why we persist with that is the ultimate sign of hubris from the manager.
Yeah. So devil's advocate here. You're in a game against lower league opposition. You've got a player who you have tried and trusted. And as Dan Vane has said on many occasions, sang three times as a manager. You play the player who you trust. Okay, fine. You can see that to a degree. But when that player in question is doing literally nothing at all, he's not making a nuisance of himself. He's got no legs. He can't run. Can't even seem to jump, doesn't really do anything. I mean, as you said, hubris is the right word for it, Rob. At what point does your hubris not, like, just fall in on itself and you think, I've got to do something different here, especially when you've got a young player in Lewis Dobbin who can just sign for anyone he wants now and the club make absolutely nothing on him, like the Thierry Small situation. Because this season, we found ourselves spending £17 million on a left back when we had a perfectly good, well, potentially good left back who could and would have come in this season and got game time. And he's not. And it's just like, why have we spent £17 million on a player when we didn't really need it? If this hadn't transpired in the way it did, potentially getting the same situation with Lewis Dobbin. And Matt, I thought when he came on, he looked really bright and he did really well, but he should have had more minutes on the pitch, shouldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. He's bright, he's energetic. You know, he's obviously got something to prove, both to himself and to any potential suitors and probably to the club as well. But it's just a sorry waste, it really is. I just can't get my head around it at all, because I'm trying not to be overly negative, but Rondon was just a black hole. Like,
yeah,
it was just. I mean, I've seen him have worse games, which is depressing. But you know, the best I can say for him after that game is that every time the ball went to him, he didn't always completely kill the attack. Sometimes he did turn his back and make the right pass and stuff. But we've got a lot of players who could do that. We didn't need to give up our single striker position to someone who basically is playing the exact same role as Andre Gomes. We may as well just stick a centre midfielder in there and then, put Dobbin on, start Dobbin. Any other team in the league would have started Dobbin, because that's what you do in a cup game. When you've got fixture congestion and rearrangements and stuff.
Third round cup game, no less.
You look at the team Liverpool put out against us.
Yeah. But they were trying to lose that game, though.
2 years ago. Well, they were. And, they can't even do that. That's the annoying thing about Liverpool. They try to lose cup games and can't even do that well.
Oh, God.
And we fuck that up. We are pure yin and yang.
We tried to lose this one and we won tonight.
it's a start, isn't it? But it is, though, isn't it? You know, we have got these young players. I mean, Al Sims wasn't on the bench today. I don't know. I have no intel in any of this.
Yeah, and COVID's going around. So Indian, who knows?
It could have been anything, but he wasn't on the bench. But Lewis Dobbin was, and surely he deserved more, especially on Rondon's show. For fuck's sake, he was grim. He really was grim.
If you like Rondon, Benitez really likes Rondon. He thinks Rondon has something, whatever, okay? How does he look at a guy that age, even if he likes him, and says, I'm going to play you 115 minutes tonight? You know what I mean? That's the other part that's crazy. I thought, well, Rondon's starting, but maybe this is one of those games where after 60 minutes, he's off and Dobbin comes on. For Rondon to play valuable, usable evaluation minutes, but also, frankly, minutes that could be given to a player who could offer, I don't know, more pace, more skill at this point, any other danger to play Rondon. It's like, we're all sitting here talking about why he plays Rondon, but think about how many minutes he played Rondon tonight. Guy who was trying to catch his breath his first few weeks at Everton after 10 minutes. It blows my mind that this is where we're at right now.
Tobino said Rondon ahead of Dobbin is just utterly, utterly unfathomable. Yeah, fair comment. It really is. And I think Kenneth said, from today's evidence, Michael Keane has a more positive influence up front than Rondon.
Michael Keane had
at least two really good chances more than
Rondon. Michael Keane's the rare defender that gets better the further he gets away from his own net.
Every time Michael Keane got really far forward, I was like, what the fuck? Why is he there? At the blue, 1878, Thierry Small, who has made such an impact. We make players great before they've even kicked the ball in anger. Yeah, I get that. I am so happy that Thierry Small can't even get on the bench at Southampton.
Oh, yeah. I kind of am.
Shows what a dick move it was by him and his agents to agitate at age 16. But all I'm saying is we had a player there who had such potential and the club really thought a lot of him. Even Ancelotti played him. you know, as Everton's youngest ever player. So he must have had something about him to let him slip through the net, pay 17 million for another left back. Who people have said had a bit of a shit debut. I've seen worse.
What, Mikulenko?
He's fine.
Yeah, he was all right.
Hey, Mikulenko made the mistake early on.
Saying he was shit.
No, Mikulenko.
He stopped the goal on the line.
He guessed his mistake, conceded the. It was his mistake at the beginning. I hadn't even gotten to the game on yet. Yeah. But like I'm telling you, let's all take a break from being us for a little bit and not drag that kid into the ground on his first game for us. You know what? I didn't notice Mikulenko for the last 80, 90 minutes of that game, which to me for a left back is something that I'll take most times, especially a young left back in a cup game. That's fine by me. I didn't really notice him for long stretches there at the end. I was like, has he been substituted? No, he's just, you know, there's nothing happening down at his, you know, his area of the pitch. And that was fine by me.
Yeah. Just doing what left backs do.
And in response to that comment, Les, I would just bring up Calvert-Lewin, because Calvert-Lewin isn't the player he is today. If we didn't, it was often necessity, but time and time again, he'd get on the pitch. He might get a start here and there. He'd get 20 minutes at the end. We kept having to play him, even though he was really, really struggling in some games. And he was being carried at times. People wrote him off. You know, he's shite. He's crap. You know, he's worth every penny, that £1 million.
I wrote him off. Yeah. You should be honest about our takes. I wrote
absolutely,
him off
because... Yeah.
I thought we've seen enough. He's just not ever going to be a scorer. And he clearly, again, that's why I love Calvert-Lewin. He is a completely self-made man in terms of his career, because I still don't think he's overly skilled, but he has worked so hard on the things that he is not good at to get a little bit better, and the things he's good at to make them, you know, much better, borderline great. And then the endeavor. That not having him for half a season, I think we have to acknowledge, is just a giant loss. Obviously, you know, you can say what you want, and believe me, I no one is more disappointed about the curse on Yerry Mina's body than I am. But not having you have seen, I think more than anything defensively over these last couple of months, we have seen what not having Yerry Mina in that back four has meant for our just god awful center half situation. Yeah. So if I turn this conversation towards the end, towards positives, I wanna see what happens when I'm not relying on Yerry Mina, but I do imagine he will be back at some point for, you know, hopefully a game or two or whatever. I'm afraid to have faith because I love him. I love him. I love his talent, but you know, you can't rely on him. Calvert-Lewin, you know, the one, while it was crazy to me to run Rondon into the ground for 115 minutes, I also conversely can credit the manager and or the medical setup, this new and improved medical setup, apparently, that kept Calvert-Lewin from playing tonight when maybe he could have, but they need to be, you know, we've seen what happens when they tried to throw, you know, Yerry Mina and others back in right after a soft, you know, tissue injury that was significant. Yeah. It's just, it's not wise. They played Calvert-Lewin, by the way, the full 90 minutes when he returned, which I thought was a little rife with danger. I thought he was going to play 70, 75 minutes. But what I'm hoping is that the return of a few key guys, we even talked about Richarlison, who to me is the straw that stirs this whole drink. We need him back. If you can get those players back, I think that what you did see tonight, if you want to focus on some of the, not just tonight, but the good developments recently, and believe me, I am squinting like fucking crazy to talk like this. Anthony Gordon is becoming a consistent net positive. I think we can all agree on that. I just wanted to see more of him tonight. I think he needs to be just fed minutes as much as possible. I want to know by the end of the season what I really think of Anthony Gordon as a full-time Premier League player on some level. John Joe Kenny, I believe me, insert your own joke here. Not only has he not been bad for like four straight games, he's been pretty good, pretty decent, like maybe decent plus. Like, I'm afraid to go too far, but that was a lovely assist for Gomez's goal tonight.
Did I think that's two games?
Two assists in two games?
Yeah.
Is that right? I mean, my God, that's, you know, it's the Thomas Rodriguez on the right again. That was nice to see. Yeah. And the irony of this, of course, is that it would be so Everton for John Joe Kenny to suddenly start being like, if John Joe Kenny had been playing like this as just kind of an average 6.5 to 7 sort of player for a period of even a few months, you wonder what decisions are made over the last, you know, year or so about the right back position, you know, or not more recently, you know. Now we've bought Patterson, you know, I wouldn't mind Kenny sticking around if he can be this kind of stopgap, every once in a while change up sort of option.
This is the thing with a player like John Joe Kenny. You bring through, he's a Kirkdale lad, Evertonian. You kind of think, would he be happy to just be the sort of second string right back, come in as and when he's needed, play some cup games? Because you do need players like that in your squad.
Yes, yes.
Or does he want to move on and do some, you know, a good championship player? It's up to him at this point, because I do think he could be, you know, given on evidence that's gone on the past few games, he's really good against Chelsea as well. Mm-hmm. He's got it within him to be a decent right back. Maybe just a backup. I don't think he can do it.
Average. I'd take average. That's been Everton's biggest. If you guys think about it, as much as
conscious,
we talk about all the money that's been wasted, and God knows we hear that every broadcast. But part of Everton's sins have been not just that certain big money star players haven't played well enough, but that the next option behind them is so bad. Well, whereas if Everton just had average Premier League replacement level players in some of these positions, then you don't have the strain on a Seamus Coleman that he has endured for however long. You don't have I love Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison. There's a great argument to be made. They've still played too many games over the last couple of years, you know, in the Premier League. And I know you've got to rely on them, and I know it's a balancing act, but even just having average performing play, like if John Joe Kenny could just be this, if Tom Davis could just be this, yes, there is a role for those guys, especially, especially guys from you know, the city. I mean, they absolutely have to be part
of it. It's Hibbert and Osman, isn't it?
It is. Oh, my God. It is Hibbert and Osman.
Guys, it's a reboot.
Oh, God. Yes. That would be great. If it was.
Everton 2009 reboot. Ian Clark said in the comments, maybe he took Gordon off the same for Tuesday. Maybe that game might be off anyway. Ian also said Gordon is not the first name on a team sheet player. I think he is, isn't he? I think he's making that
after position Pickford,
his own after Pickford. And I'd play Pickford as captain, to be honest.
I'd play him in midfield.
Hey, I think
Gordon is. Sorry, go ahead.
No, Gordon. I was just going to say,
Gordon's playing himself into that position now where he is one of the first names on the team, isn't he? That position now.
Yeah.
It's his to lose.
Everton have to hit on Gordon. I mean, they have to, you know, that's the thing that makes people crazy about City, is that not only do they have all the money, but they're also hitting on all their young players. It's because of development and investment of time and resources and all of that. Well, Everton, because they don't have as much money, they've got to hit on guys like Gordon. And the only, I keep coming back to this. I've said it so many times, everyone's sick of me saying it. This notion that young players have to be protected from themselves is ridiculous. Yes. They need to be played. Once they can physically, you know, can hack even just the basics, you've got to play them, because playing them and letting them struggle is the only way they're going to learn. And, you know, you can say iron sharpens iron or whatever, you know, cliche phrase you want to use, but that's what Gordon is better right now, because he's been getting minutes. And I don't know that he would have been getting minutes without all the injuries to Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin and others, you know, like that has, and obviously Iwobi being a nothing presence this season. And so, but he's gotten them. That's why the Dobbin omission makes me crazy in a game like this. These players, need to play, and this idea that playing them is going to keep you from, you know, going to automatically relegate you. No, what's automatically going to relegate Everton is that we play Rondon heavy minutes as an option. What's going to relegate us is that, you know, we lose one center half and everything falls apart. I was told reliably that this manager could sort of defense. It's not playing young players that's the problem. And I think that Everton, from a big picture standpoint, you know, if you had a real director of football set up or you had other decision makers of the club, you know, there's got to be more of a push to say that, you know, they're the short-termism of someone like Benitez does not match the long-term needs of this club to learn what it's got with its young players. And again, Gordon excites me. I think he can continue to get better. I'm not saying he's going to ever be a superstar or anything, but Everton don't need him to be one. They need him to be a good player. And if he could be a good player, Everton haven't had enough good players to go along with their, you know, occasionally great ones.
But yeah, Andrew Milton made a good point. He said, Brantway's had a rough debut, but he's grown immensely. So in case anyone doesn't remember Branthwaite's debut, he came on against Wolves, gave a free kick away within about 10 seconds of being on the pitch, and Wolves scored from it. But then after that, he picked up and he does look, given his performance at Chelsea, he does look like a player who we can hopefully in future, last year at centre-back, completely trust in that position. He looks like he's going to be a player, but he did have a twat of a debut, to be fair.
Can I hear Rob?
Oh, Rob, you're on mute, I think.
Oh, sorry. Branthwaite was supposed to get a start after Chelsea. That was the most he was supposed to, you know, keep his place after that game too. And what's unfortunate is that, you know, I guess it was COVID and then all the postponements. I worry that you know, it's halted a little bit of that momentum. Though, Matt, to your point before, do you feel like we have momentum? I feel like you have to win two games or string together two performances in a row before you can, as a player or as a team, say that you've got momentum. Yeah, but I do think Branthwaite excites me because of all of our center halves, he has what I would say, and this is a real compliment, believe me, he has the least liabilities. If you look at his skill set, I think he has the least liabilities of any of our center halves. What I mean by that is that he has, well, and Yerry Mina maybe, again, when he's not injured, but I think that Branthwaite has better, he has the size you want, but he's also looks very, he does not look nervous on the ball. He keeps his composure, and having a guy that is both mobile and big, I love Godfrey, but you can't play a 6 foot center half and Ben Godfrey with another 6 foot or 5 foot 11 Nathan Holgate. They've got to be paired with, I guess, you know, Michael Keane in theory, but Michael Keane is scared of life. And so he's not really going to be a long-term option, I think, but Michael Keane has managed to stick around no matter what. But I do think that, I do think Branthwaite getting a chance, going back to it, young players getting chances is going to be the thing that is going to keep me interested in a season like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will wrap this up soon, but I've just got a comment in from Jeff. Actually, first off, Neil H, can't believe Les is drinking Moretti. I'm sorry, I bought it for Christmas. It was cheap in Sainsbury's. I didn't want it because of Ancelotti. I'm with you on that. But Jeff Thompson said the players Benitez has signed have been good, except Rondon. The players were here before him are the issue. They panic and make mistakes. Now, I think that's a fair point. I think the recruitment while Benitez has been here and even in this window has been really good. I think we signed good players on reasonable wages but not very much money. Even the last two players, I know I said about Thierry Smalling, we're signing left back for 17 million, we don't particularly need. But if we get rid of Luka Dean for 20 million and we sign Patterson and Mikalenko for 30 million combined, their wages is less than Luka Dean. I can see value in that because Luka Dean, 28 until he's 29, which is soon. And this is the last window we've got.
Yeah. For good. I think that's a fair point.
The football's been shit.
Yeah.
That's the big problem. But the recruitment has been good. And it's really messing with me head because I think on the recruitment level, we're going in the right direction, weirdly, for some reason. Now, on a footballing level, we're just fucking slipping by the wayside massively.
You better hope, though, that these players, because Townsend's a short-termer, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But, hey, you know.
But just, he's on a free.
Exactly.
Players like that, it's fine.
hey, take some of that money that you saved from Luka Dean and in addition to your investments and give Damari Gray an extension now before it gets more, it's only getting more expensive every 100%. Single week. I would just give him some job security and a good wage, but his price is just continuing to go up.
He's already looking like a player that's too good for us, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Damari Gray, despite the fact that he has had a bit of a journey over the last couple of years. Remember, we talked about this at the beginning of the season. He's 25. He's not an old player Everton basically took a flyer by saying, hey, he's 25 and he's got this skill set. Maybe we can, hit a home run with this. And they did. They need to now take that win and make it a real win by locking him down to, a decent contract. Now, again, I know he's on like a 3-year or whatever, but you probably are going to have to improve his terms to keep him happy. I think that'll be key for sure. But Les, to your point about recruitment, it's a small sample size so far. Let's see, because let's see how this goes. I mean, we don't know anything about Mikulenko or Patterson, though I'm obviously excited about the theory of their potential, but it's Everton. But I would say that there does come a point where you still have to ask the question, does good recruitment paired with piss poor management, what does that equal? Is that a net a neutral? I don't know if you really gain much. Is it any kind of sum game? But I hope that these are the types of players, because we hear this all the time, that, well, these players are bought by this manager for this plan and for this scheme. You got to hope that these players that are young enough can still be molded in a variety of philosophies and formations, that we're not faced with the situation when we replace Benitez eventually, hopefully, that we're sticking another manager with a set of players that don't fit his ideas. I think Mikulenko and Patterson seem flexible, more balanced offensively and defensively, but I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, it's it's sounding in the right direction. We'll wrap this up now, but I do feel like this game has raised possibly more questions than it's answered. Everton are still a bit shit, it seems, because we kind of laboured against a not very good Hull side.
Yeah.
But we did get through, and to go on that cliche, we are still in the hat for the fourth round, when, as people have said, we will inevitably get Chelsea or City or Big Red or Bigger Red away. Who knows? Matt, what do you think? Have you got anything to build on with this, or do we really just literally have to take every single game in isolation until Benitez goes? It's horrible.
Trying to put a positive spin on it, I feel like there's more on the basis of that game and mainly individual performances for us to build on and be hopeful about than, say, 4 games ago. Yeah. Which, with all the postponements, was probably like September. But we've got to be positive. We still won the game and everything. It's been a bit doom and gloom, this, but I mean, we don't do these things to sit here and go, oh, we won, so let's just talk about the scoreline and nothing else. Like, we do these things because we talk about the trajectory and the journey. Yeah. And currently, the trajectory we're on is like a very, very almost perfectly flat line, maybe a slight slope upwards. So, let's see how it goes.
I'm digging that positivity. The slight incline.
Yeah.
I'm having that problem. Are you there?
Yeah. Am I there with the incline, you mean?
With the slight incline?
No, let's have some modest goals here. Like, let's win 2 games in a row. Let's do that. And then, or hey, I'll even be easier. Get a draw against Leicester. Just stop this bleeding for more than, a game here and a game there, because that's relegation for him. Again, I know this is a cup game and all of that, but, you hope that a result like this can turn into something. I think that's the thing, is that when you saw the buttons that were pushed tonight, you do wonder how many of the guys that got put on in some of these situations, like Gabamin, are ever going to play in the league. You know, like Decore, I don't want to sound the alarm, but Decore's been kind of meh for the last couple months. And we all love Decore, and I believe in his character and his talent. He's been struggling a little bit. Don't know if he's carrying a knock. I mean, but again, having said all of that, I tried to spin it positive at the end. I want to see a little more before I'm even willing to say that this flat line is anything but a flat line. But there are some really promising parts to work with at Everton. That, you know, as much as we all say all the players are terrible all the time, and I get it, I feel that way about most of them, but there are definitely some really real bright spots here. There's some real opportunities to not have Mikulenko and Patterson be poisoned by the culture that came before them. You know, I hope that they seem like characters that have real mental resolve. They're going to need it, and we're going to need it, because this is going to probably, and I never said this before, but this is the first time I've really felt like there is a real chance that we are sweating it out the last month or so of the season. So I think we got to strap in and get ready, but there is something to work with here if we can stop with all the self-inflicted wounds.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's 100% agree with all that. I'll finish on a couple of comments. Jeff Thompson, Holgate, Tosin, Kenny, Delph, etc. will be gone soon. I think their contracts are up this summer, and we can start to move on. It's a fair point. I think, as Keith said on the spaces before, the wages that Delph, Sigurdsson, and someone else, Iwobi, maybe.
Yeah, but we still need bodies to replace them.
We do. But
just losing them as players is not a net positive.
Well, I don't know. I think if you can play some sort of functional players in their positions, then it kind of is. Because what they are offering at the minute is a bit of a net zero.
Hey, Les, there's a fair subset of the listening audience that equates Everton's accounting and checkbook health with their own somehow. So I feel like, you know, maybe it is a net positive that if those guys are off the wage bill, that I'm going to suddenly feel a little freer to order an extra pizza each week at home or something, because my finances are a little bit more in order than they once were.
You know what? If those players are off the wage bill, I will feel a little bit more comfortable with the best part of a grand kids' season tickets.
Yeah.
Ian Clark said, Dobbin looking decent, a bit like James Vaughan. I will have that comparison. Ian Clark, depends, friend is a cheat. That's fair enough. Two, I remember, but if it was three, that's fine.
I've had a grudge against Kevin Friend ever since, in our game against Blackpool, the 5-3, was it? He disallowed a Louis Sahar goal because there was a foul on the build-up on Louis Sahar, and he pulled it back for a free kick.
Oh.
What the hell?
I had forgotten that. I have this great ability to forget a lot of everything.
Louis Sahar scored four in that game as well, didn't he?
Scored four, yeah. The only time he ever scored more than two in a Premier League game. Yeah. Or any game.
Luke had some crazy games like that for us. Every once in a while, speaking of a guy who's injured too much, but my God, he was fun sometimes, wasn't he?
Oh, he was. Yeah. And Jabino said, need to put Rafala out to pasture at Thornton Hough, which I can't complain with. I will personally drive him from Caldy and put him to pasture at Thornton Hough, which is just
from what you were saying before. From what you were saying before, it might be an idea to kick him upstairs, make him the director of football.
Yeah, there you go.
Someone said that on the comments. Yeah, make him the.
He can fail up.
Yeah.
I mean,
he'll fail upwards, and then Matt's line will go like this.
I mean, the takeaway from tonight is the Toffees are through in the hat for the next round.
When's the draw?
Be safe. Be tomorrow, will it?
Tomorrow night.
Monday. Either way, we're getting a twat of a draw away, but we're in the hat. You've got to be in it to win it, But I think that game posed probably more questions than it answered. But there we go. That is the nature of Everton. Rob, thanks for joining us. Matt, same. Thanks to everyone who's got involved. We will have a build up to potentially the Leicester game, which might be called off, because they've cried COVID after all the players being at the start, but that is another story entirely. So our next game could be Norwich away, which does seem like a massive six-pointer, as much really, really don't want at this point in the season. But it might be, I think, you know, that's just where we are. But if nothing else, Bolton Tobby is a massive roller coaster. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Everton have won. We need to be more happy about it. It's hard to be dead made up. We fucking won a game, which is, you know, the few and far between. Fine. So let's just enjoy the rest of the weekend and pray for a nice draw. Maybe Shrewsbury at home in the next leg. That would be nice. We'll speak to you soon. Up the Toffees.
Join the BD team in Columbus, Nebraska. We're hiring for multiple positions with sign-on bonus eligibility. Our comprehensive benefits plan starts for all employees on their first day, including low or no cost insurance plans for select positions, career growth opportunities, and more. BD is made for what's next in health and your career. Apply today at jobs.bd.com. That's jobs.bd.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.